This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Welcome, everybody. Oh, my gosh. It is such a beautiful day out there. I hope that's not preventing you from checking us out here at the Wake Up Call on WNRN. Special welcome to the Harrison Bow folks on 95.1. You should be listening to us every Sunday, but, you know, maybe not. You might have other special things to do. But don't forget, you can listen to us afterwards on the www.cvillepodcast.com, and that might be your thing today if you can't stay for the whole hour, because the guys in the studio will be talking politics, and gosh, you're going to want to participate. You can always write comments there, or you can call in with live questions and comments today. Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka. Jim, how are you?
Doing just fine, Rick. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, well, thanks. That's because you didn't poop or pee in the corner like my dog has occasionally done.
I do my best.
Pete Ronayne. Pete.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
We got to work something. Oh, let me try this. One more time.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
There you go. Thank you, sir. as usual, I can't always find the proper button to push.
But Pete, you did not poop and pee in the corner.
I did not poop and pee in the corner. Actually, I made that silly comment. My dog Lazarus hasn't pooped or peed in the house in months. Can actually leave him in the house while I go to work. He's a good dog. Pete and Jim, both local professors, authors, political experts. There's really no need to call those folks that make it on the Today Show, because we have these guys right here. And don't forget, write down the number, stretch out the finger muscles. You'll want to dial us up soon, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That is a toll-free line. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We are going to be talking politics today, the presidential race, the Virginia politics, which I think is getting overlooked here, even amongst us, those here in the state of Virginia. Let me, before we get started and I get forgetful by being caught up in the topic, let me thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com. It's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka in the studio. I'll let you guys start. Where do you want to start, presidential or state politics? Because there's so much on both.
Jim, where do you want to go?
Oh, let's start presidential first.
All right. Because I can tie the two together.
Oh, they might be tied together.
And that's where I want to...
That's why you're the host.
All right, so... And I love the word presumptive, which means, you know, well, we think they're going to be the candidates. But you have Barack Obama, you have Mr. McCain. Who's going to win the state of Virginia? In the past, it's always been, or for a long time now, it's been a Republican state. The Republican candidate doesn't have to worry about it. Virginia's going to vote for him.
So you're tying it together right off the bat.
Right out of the box.
Yeah, I thought we were just going to evolve into the tying together.
But I think that's a big deal for a lot of people.
Well, Virginia has not gone for a Democrat since 1964. So that, you know, obviously is, you know, quite a hurdle to overcome. Now, certainly if Jim Webb were to be Obama's vice presidential pick, that could affect the race, certainly. But I think that, generally speaking, Obama's got a very strong fighting chance in Virginia, even without Webb. Webb would sort of be icing on the cake. You've got a Democratic administration in Richmond. You have an extremely popular former governor running for Senate, Mark Warner. And the state's demographics have changed quite a bit over the few years. And we've seen this over the past couple of races in Virginia, gubernatorial and Senate. And most notably, I think what signaled this was Obama formally kicking off his first rally of the presidential campaign at Nissan Pavilion in Virginia. So I think it shows that the Obama folks are seeing Virginia as an extremely competitive state, and it would be tremendously important for them to pull it out of the Republican column. It also frees up some options elsewhere in more competitive races, Indiana being one of them, where if they lose it and they pick Virginia, it could offset some change the balance of power in the Electoral College. So I think even without Webb, Virginia is very much in play for Obama.
And that's a big change. I mean, you said it
huge.
Goes back.
Oh, it's yeah. huge. It's extremely important.
It's a huge change. It's a huge change. Ricky used the term presumptive. I don't be too bold, but maybe we have a presumptive a Democratic senator in Mark Warner. I mean, the lead is enormous right now. It's like 60-33 or some such. So, I mean, to be very bold this early, and no offense to the Republican nominee, but Warner has seemingly a sort of a runaway candidacy already. And there's a lot of talk, and that certainly points to changes in Democratic politics here in Virginia. I mean, we'll have two Democratic senators from Virginia, which is a landmark in and of itself. And there's been some interesting conversation about the momentum that provides actually the presidential candidate. I mean, we often talk about the coattails of the president, the nominee, helping state elections, helping senators, et cetera. But in this case, that type of momentum in this state can further Obama's chances of success. And as I think Jim started to allude to, in at least three of the most recent polls, Obama leads in Virginia by anywhere from just 1 to 7 points. That alone is huge. Yeah. There's a long way to go, but the fact that it's that competitive this early is very significant. So the idea is a lot of people will turn up. Democrats are energized nationwide in a way that they haven't seen in a long time, and a lot of people will show up and vote for Warner and be willing to sort of complete the deal and go with a full Democratic slate and pull the lever for Obama. So actually Obama being helped by the senatorial candidate, not the other way around, which is an interesting dynamic, and there are other states where that's likely to happen as well.
But how does that work financially? Because I got that thing in my throat. If this state is competitive, doesn't that force Obama and McCain to spend monies here that they might not otherwise spend here, that they might be able to spend in Ohio or in Indiana, et cetera, and some of the other states that are typically closer and have often been the tipping points for who wins, because now Obama will spend money here that he might not otherwise have done. He just, you know, you just sort of write it off as, well, let me get my, you know, I'll put my monies in around the Northern Virginia part, because people who see TV there also live in Maryland, or around the base, the south side part of the state, because people who see TV there live in North Carolina, mm-hmm. and things like that. But around the central part, around the Hampton Roads part, where we will see television ads and print ads, that obviously that's some serious monies coming out of that. Or can Warner, and again, to tie these two together, the state and the national sense, be spending his money that Obama wouldn't have to spend? Are they allowed to do that? Is he allowed to put, you know, vote Warner, vote Obama at the same time, and the money come out of, you know, Warner's campaign funds?
If it's paid for by the party and it's a joint event, for example, a Democratic Party event that says, let's support our Democratic candidates, then they could do it. They can't spend individual campaign money for specific candidates without authorization. The fact that, of course, you're going to have Mark Warner rallies and Obama rallies does give you sort of a force multiplier effect, in the sense that, you know, voters for one are more than likely to vote for the other, generally not one to one. So that helps with money. But there's two important points there, Rick, with this. First, that Obama's going to spend large sums of money anyway in Northern Virginia. I mean, this was going on actually, and, you know, John Kerry spent some money up in Northern Virginia as well in 2004. But I think what you're getting at is the critical point in terms of financing this campaign is why Obama elected to opt out of public financing. Obama has raised extraordinary sums of money, done very well, especially with, you know, low donations, $50 to $100 donations, which he can go back to those people and tap them several times in the campaign. And I think the recognition among Obama economist strategist, that they're going to have to be spending money in places where Democrats weren't going to spend it before and spend it very wisely, is the principal reason why Obama has elected to have the more unconstrained system of going with spending his own money rather than public.
Yeah, and I would say to Rick's question as well that, that the funding issue of who's spending money in an area that they might not have, I think it actually hurts the McCain campaign more this time around than Obama.
Why is that?
I would argue that Obama's excited to be able to spend money here because it actually might make a difference, whereas
yes.
before you're talking about a state that had been traditionally red, the McCain campaign, you know, years past could have just assumed that it was going to go for them and not have to really spend a dime here. That goes for New Mexico is going to fall in that, and that column's going to be right on the fence. Colorado's the same thing. So Republicans being forced to spend money in states that previously were really not that competitive. So, and that can be the reverse in other circumstances, but there are a number of states that are a bit more purple than they've been in the past.
Right.
And it's going to certainly benefit Obama in terms of spending.
Hang tight, Caller.
And this actually is a strategy that Howard Dean developed a couple of years ago for the Democratic Party to be competitive in all 50 states, not to cede any electoral battleground to the Republicans. He was criticized for this within the Democratic Party on the grounds that it would be probably inefficient to spend money in places such as Nebraska, which are overwhelmingly going to go Republican. But Dean's argument was a presence everywhere, it can have a payoff, and it is having a payoff in states like Virginia, where even a marginal difference can change the state from, you know, one from the red column to purple and at least give you a fighting chance. So it's part of a strategy that took place long before Obama actually even entered the presidential race.
Mm-hmm. All right, 11:11 here on the WNRN Sunday morning wake-up call as we talk national and Virginian politics. Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka here in the studio, and we have the anonymous caller on line one. Hey, caller.
I'm well. How you doing?
I'm all right. What you got? What are you bringing to the table?
Well, I had two questions. My first question was, what exactly is the party affiliation of the show this morning? Because I'm starting to feel that it's a little more Democratic than Republican. And to vote for Obama and or have him elected for president, is that the best move, dare I say, for America, just based on the fact that he really doesn't have that much political know-how or hasn't really been in the game that long, and for him to be the leader of the free world may make some decisions that are not that may be positive now, may not be positive down the road.
All right, Carl, let me ask you a question.
I'll talk about that.
All right, let me ask you, are you still there? Damn. All right, seems unfair for the caller not to give out his political side while he asks us to give out your, what was the phrase that he used? Party affiliation of the program today?
Well, and obviously, I mean, we don't want the show to tilt either way, but if the opening question is about the reality in Virginia, you don't have to like the reality in Virginia, but it's leaning Democratic. Whether you're a Warner fan or a Warner hater or Obama fan or Obama hater, those are the trends objectively. Now, things certainly might change come election time. That's number one.
And I have questions on here that relate to others. I have how does the former White House press secretary Scott McClellan affect the McCain campaign? Is McCain sort of stepping away from that? Is he happy to have that because he wants to be away from Bush?
Right. And we're a mere 13 minutes in. We haven't even gotten to we haven't gotten out of Virginia yet. So you know, we can buttress our pragmatic middle of the road credentials in just a second. But
yeah.
I really do think because our opening conversation is about Virginia, the trends in Virginia are in a historic and interesting way towards the Democrats. Now, if you're the GOP, you might say, oh well, that's biased. It's not a question of bias. It's a question of what's actually happening in the political landscape. Now, the caller's comment about experience, that's going to be a defining element of this campaign for a lot of people. I mean, even throughout the primaries on the Democratic side, real concerns about a relative lack of experience. He has tremendous political experience as an organizer, as a community organizer, etc. But it's true, the depth of that experience, the national security experience. I mean, some things that we'll get into, I think, a little bit later. The caller rightly
don't count on it. Well, here's a point. Okay, fine. I'll play along with the caller's sort of leading me towards pro McCain, con Obama questions. I believe it was two young Muslim women were claimed that they were refused seats behind Obama during a recent rally because they would have been seen as sitting behind him and in front of the TV cameras, and that was done because they wear headscarves. Was this more than just an overly excitable, detailed Obama supporter doing things that he shouldn't have been doing, or is this a true issue in the campaign race?
It is an issue. I think that this actual story was blown a little bit out of proportion in terms of it was done at a very low level. Certainly this was not something I think that Obama himself was aware of when he was speaking. But yet it gets to the heart of a question, and this is something the caller was talking about. Obama is very concerned about being portrayed as being soft on terror. His middle name, of course, and he's talked about this, is Hussein. He's worried that this is going to be used as a wedge issue by the Republicans, which, and of course, McCain's big advantage is national security, anti-terror. These are areas where Obama is considered, and Obama himself has sort of acknowledged in some speeches is a little bit weaker in terms of his background. And so the fact that the Democrats would not want to have the optics of Obama giving a speech with folks in headscarves behind him is not surprising to me, because it shows that that's going to be the issue where they're concerned about. I do think, though, and I think this is going to happen during the summer as the campaign progresses, Obama is going to have to have a series of very hard-hitting speeches and events on foreign policy, on terrorism, in order to try and deal with this issue, because it's worse for him to have it come out in sort of a sidebar in stories such as this than if he just were to take McCain on directly. He started to do that already, but I think it highlights what's perceived to be the major issue in the Obama campaign is the national security argument.
And that those issues of perception matter. And Rick, you raise an extremely sensitive one, but politics is as much about perception as anything. Not necessarily what you really are, but are you perceived as likable? Are you perceived as optimistic? Are you perceived as having the right experience? And that's a really touchy one. I mean, if you consider from the Obama campaign's perspective, the scurrilous and sometimes really pretty loathsome emails that continue to circulate around with real misinformation about his background, they're actually very proactive now in launching their own website to combat each and every one of those. But it's a very sort of sensitive issue. There, of course, there's still elements of identity politics involved in this campaign, and it's going to continue to define it in very interesting ways.
Well, you know, I say this with slight joking manner, but also something that might help things is that he continues to be called Obama, mm-hmm. and that puts such a strain on people who are pro to remember what the first name is and to say it without, I mean, there's been so much news on Obama, bin Laden, it flows in everyone's mind as to why don't we take on the Cher Madonna thing and just call him Barack? And that issue is, it's no longer there for so many people who are even supporting him. You don't have to have that pause to make sure that you're saying it properly. Mm-hmm. And you can bash me as much as you'd like about that, but I find myself having that moment on occasion. And as those of you who listen, you know that I can't pronounce half the words properly as it is, and I can't even push the button. But I think that if we just refer to him as Barack, that for so many people, it's washed away because the association by word and phrase is not there any longer. 1118 here in the wake-up call. You dial up 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We got our own political specialists in the studio today, Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka, professors, author, and, you know, bring it on. Ask your questions. Make your comments. One of you, and Jim, I think it might have been you, or I don't know, mentioned public financing. And mm-hmm. how that is. But am I mistaken that Barack mentioned or originally had where he made a promise to use public financing, but has since changed his mind and, quote, broken that promise? How does that affect things?
Well, it's certainly something that the Republicans have seized on and attacked him for. It's true. He did say that he wanted his campaign to be financed by public money. But, of course, the fact that he has raised so much of it, I mean, he has just surpassed fundraising. His this campaign alone has raised more money than any campaign before in American politics up to this point. And I think there was a very strong argument within the Obama campaign both ways. One saying we should remain faithful to this idea of the public financing system, which was put in place after Watergate. It's that little box you check on your tax returns to have a pot of money that is then allocated by the Treasury to the campaigns and carries limits on what it can be spent for and how much you can spend. And others, and this is the real critical point, Rick, for the Democrats this year who just want to win. I mean, after right. the past
that's
8 years,
that's what it is.
They
that's
want
what it
to
is.
Win. And the idea being how, you know, now that we finally are in a position where we could conceivably outdo the Republicans in fundraising, why would we want to squander that weapon? And it's an argument both ways. And clearly the Obama campaign managers decided it would be better to sort of keep that sword that they have in the form of the assets on hand. I mean, Obama has $43 million cash on hand right now, as opposed to McCain having about $31.5 million. And while McCain has done better over the past month, and Obama hasn't raised at the same extent since the nomination has been closed up, Obama's still ahead, and Obama has very good potential for fundraising into the late summer and early fall. So that's the argument. It does open Obama to charges of inconsistency and hypocrisy, and this is something that's going to fly around the campaign on both sides as we get closer to Election Day.
But I would add to that that on an issue like this in terms of the public, this is going to have a shelf life of about 3 days in terms of the general electorate. I mean, it's not going to last until convention time. Now, yeah, in the short term and the punditocracy and all that talking about it, it gives everybody something to wrap themselves around the axle over. But clearly, as Jim mentioned, I mean, the Democrats outraising Republicans, that's another amazing mm-hmm. development in more recent politics. And certainly when Obama made his initial pledge to go the public funding route, let's face it, he had no idea of the phenomenon, if you want to call it, that he would become and mm-hmm. the fundraising mm-hmm. success that he would have. Clearly political expediency. I mean, you can say that early on that, yeah, public financing is the way to go, because I have no idea how this is going to snowball and how much money I'm going to end up raising. I mean, thinking back at such recent political history of what a long shot this guy was, just to even be a player, not to mention to raise the amounts of money he has from so many people. So they clearly, as Jim said, they want to win. This team wants to win, and because of politics and expediency, they're saying that was a nice pledge and it was well-intentioned, but the reality on the ground is different now. We're going with the big pile of money.
All right, we are talking national and state politics with the big guys in the studio, Jim Sofka, Pete Ronayne, 1122 on the wake-up call. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny with some scattered thunderstorms today. Some may produce large hail and damaging winds. Highs 80 to 85. Showers and storms tonight. Lows 60 to 65. Chillier in the valley. Mostly cloudy with thunderstorms and showers tomorrow. Highs 83 to 88. Right now, pretty much the same everywhere across the listening area. A few clouds. 75 in the valley, 77 in Lynchburg, 77 in Richmond, 75 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, let me thank our friends at Blue Ridge Graphics for getting us on the air today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right, we got a call in. Someone who didn't want to go on air with this question. Or this comment. Obama does not have a chance because the country is not ready for an African-American president yet.
Well,
certainly heard that in many places.
Yeah, it's certainly there. If you look at the front page of the Washington Post this morning, has the new survey that was out that 3 in 10 Americans admitted to having a racial bias. Of course, given you know the fact that this is tendently underreported in statistics, I would say that number is probably you know closer in some demographics to half. And that's a reality that Obama is dealing with and the campaign is dealing with. Whether or not I my personal view as a political analyst is I don't think it's going to be at that decisive overall in the election. It's going to matter a great deal within subcategories of the electorate, state to state. I think it, as a whole, I don't think it's something that is going to play out deeply, but it could.
Well, doesn't that mean you talk about from state to state and subcategories of some groups, doesn't that mean that it plays a big role because we're not talking about electing president based on general election, you know, votes, but we're doing it on with the Electoral College?
The question that we're looking at, though, is to what extent it's going to actually matter to Obama's chances to election if the folks that are going to vote against him would vote against him anyway, that is, vote against a Democrat. That's the hardball political question. Whether or not they're voting against Obama because he's black or because of his particular views that he's, say, pro-choice, the question is, how many votes would he lose that a white candidate would otherwise gain?
Right.
We don't know that right now, but that number is going to be smaller than the overall reporting of that this study would
be. So you're saying that I would vote for a Democrat, I would vote for a pro-choice candidate, regardless, but I'm not voting for a black guy.
Right. That's the question.
There's a significant overlap, I would argue, and I think Jim was saying the same thing. There's a significant overlap in the people who say, I'm not going to vote for a black candidate, period, end, and a group that wouldn't vote for a Democrat to begin with.
Right.
So then you take out the group that it's simply because of the race issue. And as Jim mentioned on the cover of the Post today, in their ABC Washington Post poll last month, 9 in 10 whites said they'd be comfortable with a black president. Two-thirds said they'd be entirely comfortable with it. And actually, that was more than double the percentage of all adults who said they would be so at ease with someone entering the office for the first time at age 72. So you have actually more people saying they have concern about the age issue for McCain than they do about the race issue with Obama. And I think that's certainly part, a product of, and this is not meant to be biased, so if that caller is still listening, I think a very savvy campaign run by the Obama folks. And it is a product of his age. He's 46 years old. He is not a product of the civil rights generation.
He's younger than both of you, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is that true?
No.
No. But not by much.
But thanks a lot. No, but he is actually more of our generation, which I would argue is a post-affirmative action generation.
I like to slam my guests.
Yes, it's nice. We'll be back. Which doesn't mean affirmative action doesn't exist anymore, but it means in terms of his mindset, he, like a lot of other Americans who have turned out to support him, have come of age politically in an era where it's affirmative action has already played out positively in many ways. We're further from the civil rights era. So he has never defined himself as a black candidate. It's very different than Jesse Jackson running for president, et cetera. I mean, he doesn't run from it, but he has not been so far, I mean, this is my take, a candidate of identity politics. That it's just not defined who he's been. Now, that certainly has led to some rifts for him in the African-American community who say, you need to campaign more like this and speak to our issues. And his argument, he's even said in his book, we need to get over the baby boomer obsession with the sort of racialized politics of the 60s and 70s. So, I mean, I think that's reflected in these numbers where a lot more white Americans are very comfortable with him because it's not the defining element of his campaign so far. Will it become a defining element? Will people try to define him? That remains to be seen. But, anyhow.
979-0919-1877-WNRN Rocks. Feel free to call us up. Make your comments like the last caller. Or the caller before, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS.
I would also say that I think the Obama campaign was helped by the fact that the Reverend Wright issue has already happened and exploded early on, and Obama gave his speech, et cetera. I think if that had happened post-convention, et cetera, it would have a much more deleterious effect. I'm still surprised by that campaign's initially handling of that. I've never figured out how they didn't know this would come up. This guy had some pretty inflammatory rhetoric for quite some time. But the overall point is, in terms of, again, race and the president, I think that issue happened early on and is fading in the rearview mirror, at least for now. Probably helps him more than hurts him.
Yeah, and the fact that Obama actually finally came out and denounced Wright's comments and distanced himself. His initial speech was aimed really at attacking what Wright was saying and not the man, and then he sort of came out with a much stronger speech after the second iteration when Reverend Wright spoke at the National Press Club and essentially reiterated and amplified some of his earlier remarks. I agree with Pete. I think the issue is going to come up. You're going to see the images of Reverend Wright. You're going to hear the sermons. You're going to hear these talks again as we get closer to the fall. But once Obama essentially said, this is not me, this is not what I believe in, I have completely distanced myself, and now, of course, he's actually taken himself off the rolls of that church. He's disassociated himself formally with the church. I don't know how much more mileage you're going to get out of it at this point. I think the issue's done.
And I think Senator McCain, as an individual, will be very careful with this. I don't see him as a person, given his background and I think his integrity, wanting to use this as a bludgeon himself. There might be some surrogates who will, but I think it would fly in the face of what McCain wants to do, is to also come across as optimistic, also come across as positive, and have a more sort of above the board campaign. So I don't see him personally trying to use that issue himself.
I'm curious. We mentioned polls a couple times during the first half hour. What are the current poll numbers, and how much will they possibly change? I mean, I guess I'm curious as to, not with any particular historical thing that you can point to, I'm not asking you to be history majors, but how much does a standard race change in poll numbers unless there's a complete blunder, or, you know, the really large skeleton in the closet comes out?
It could change quite a bit. I mean, obviously, if you look, we were talking about the race before in Virginia. If you look, George Allen was light years ahead of Jim Webb.
But I qualify
this stage.
That as a blunder.
Right. A blunder can change things. The problem here, and if you look at the national poll of polls, which really doesn't matter because the election is 50 different elections that are put together, the national poll of polls has Obama over McCain by 46-40%. The issue here where I think it is going to change quite a bit up until the last minute is this election is going to be fought over independents. And independents generally don't identify their leanings to pollsters. So it's a hard group to track. You have your diehard Republican constituency, Democratic constituency. And what makes this election even more peculiar than past ones is that both of these candidates do such a good job in appealing to independents and actually soft core supporters of the other party. McCain has done well among more moderate to conservative Democrats, and Obama has brought in liberal Republicans. And so the fact that these party affiliations are incredibly in flux means that the campaign's going to have to mature a bit before these polls are meaningless. I don't look at any polls that are taken really before the very end of September as carrying a great deal of weight at all, especially in a race like this that's fought over independence.
And I think the primary season showed us how dramatically things can change, whether you want to call it blunders or just the evolution of politics. If we had been having, I'm sure we did at some point, a conversation before the primary season even kicked off, and we were just talking about national polls at that point, and you're going to use those as your predictive measure of who we'd be talking about today, it would easily have said Giuliani and Clinton.
Yep.
Well, easily. And think of how that landscape changed completely. I mean, Barack Obama was a complete unknown.
And I think
John McCain written off as dead.
I think you and I said it's pretty easy to see Clinton at the top because she's the name.
Because everybody knows her.
That's right.
And Giuliani was exactly
the
same way. It was complete name recognition. And look at how that's changed over time. So I think these polls are going to be closed for quite some time. And Jim's absolutely right. Most Americans, except for the enlightened listenership here at NRN, don't really pay close attention to this stuff until after both conventions have happened. Then it's really game on. So we can get all caught up in these wranglings and these issues, and they seem so important right now. But people really don't flip their switch in terms of attention to this until after the convention. So early September, then things really start to take shape.
And the conventions
are invited back for that.
Yeah, you're going to send us to the conventions, aren't you? We're going to be reporting live from.
And the conventions are very late this year.
Yeah, they are.
You know, conventions used to be held, you know, mid July and then mid August. You know, we're into early September now. By the time this is all said and done.
All right. Again, feel free to dial up and ask your questions or make your comments. 979-0919, the toll-free number for those of you a little further out, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me drop back into the Virginia politics and tie this together for a moment. Jim Webb as a potential vice presidential candidate. I can see him being interested in this position from a personal standpoint. Where does he want to go on the national scale, the possibility of being the vice president of the United States? But why in the world would the party, the Democratic Party, nationally or in the state of Virginia, want him to do that and give back the senatorial seat that he, for many people, considered to be a fluke that he's in it in the first place?
Well, it would be a major, potentially is a major problem, but it could work to advantage given the fact that you have Tim Kaine in Richmond. Of course, Governor Kaine has also been mentioned as a potential vice presidential candidate. I think that Jim Webb is a more likely candidate than Governor Kaine.
And that's because of his...
Because of Webb's
background
as Secretary of the Navy, okay. He's got stronger national security credentials. Yeah, that
why
would help.
Give up the seat?
Because if he is elected, let's say hypothetically that Barack Obama and Jim Webb form a ticket, they are elected in November. That means that Jim Webb is sworn in as Vice President of the United States in January of 2009. He immediately becomes President of the Senate. Then he would resign his Senate seat, and the governor can appoint an interim replacement. That allows Governor Kaine tremendous latitude in putting someone in that seat with the virtues of incumbency to gear up for an election down the road so that, yes, of course, it could potentially risk the seat. There's a lot of competitive Republican candidates in Virginia politics. You know, but then again, there are no sure things generally in politics. There's no sure thing that conceivably Webb would be reelected. It's a long way off to the next election would be 2000. He was elected in 2006. You're looking at a 2012 election. I mean, I'm sure he would be, but let's say something were to happen and a Republican wins it in 2012. All that's to say that I don't think it would be as risky as many people believe if or would surmise looking at it just from the fact of holding if an election were to be held in November as opposed to the governor putting in an interim candidate for the Democrats. I think the fact that you have Kaine in Richmond and likely, as Pete was alluding to earlier, another Democratic senator in Mark Warner, who I also believe is a strong favorite. It wouldn't be bad. It would actually work potentially to the Democrats' advantage and give Virginia a vastly more leverage on the national scene than it's had in recent years.
And if you believe choosing a Virginian gives you any boost in the home states, I'm skeptical of that, but that's often this common wisdom that, yeah, if you choose Webb, then, you know, helps put Virginia further into play. That's another benefit and worth the risk. But
all right, we got a caller on line two. We got Michelle in Richmond. Hey, Michelle.
Hello. Hi, I'm a 58-year-old Caucasian Democratic female and proud to be so. And regarding anyone who speaks of Barack Obama's lack of experience, that really should be a non-topic, and I refer to President Bush's background. And furthermore, Barack Obama is wise enough to know that he doesn't know everything, and, you know, he has the intelligence to choose a good team around him. Jumping over to Jim Webb as a possible candidate for vice president, Jim Webb makes me very proud and hopeful about good, positive laws that are coming down the road. And I think he would be an excellent choice for vice president, but I think more timely used right now in the Senate, and then he can build to the presidency in the future. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate that. You know, I heard a funny you talk about Obama not having experience, and neither did George W. Bush. I heard a lighthearted comment on NPR, which I listen to occasionally. It's not all in our end, about him writing a book when he's done with his presidency. Dear God, it's me, George.
Well, you know, the experience issue is interesting. If you think of the sort of where our most recent presidents have come from, except for those who were vice president first, like Bush 41, we have had a series of governors. I mean, one of the reasons why this is one of the most fascinating elections we've had, I really believe, in a long time, for so many reasons, not the least of which is we are going to have a senator elected president for the first time since John Kennedy.
It's been governors more than senators.
And so you can talk about what experience do governors bring. Of course, they bring some. They bring some executive experience. They bring experience working with legislatures, etc. But they in general don't bring significant national security experience, which is something that's always touted in terms of Senator Obama. I would also say on that issue, and Jim and I have talked about this before, some of them struggle to articulate it, but I think because of where the country is right now, because of 8 years of this administration, but it could have been any administration, it's in a change mode, and in many ways the lack of experience will work in his favor. I mean, if you're going to argue that you're a candidate of change, that you're a post-partisan candidate, that you can reach across the divide, in many ways a lack of experience and a more slender Senate record helps Obama in this situation. If you recall, I mean, John Kerry, for example, is an extremely experienced senator. If you're an experienced senator, you've got a long, strange voting record that can be twisted and used against you. And Senator McCain will experience that as well. So in many ways, I think that lack of experience, the freshness, adds to his appeal. Now, it's a real concern for some other people as well, but if I think of the mood in the country as a whole, I think it's one of the rare opportunities where relative inexperience is not such a bad thing in terms of perceptions.
I agree. And if you look at you know what Michelle was talking about with George Bush when he was governor, one of the reasons why the Republicans were happy putting him up in 2000 was because foreign policy really wasn't an issue in that campaign. If you look at it, you know, there were issues that we've, you know, the stem cell research, all of these, they're still there. But, you know, they faded from view, of course, after 9/11, and the idea then being that foreign policy, national security rises to the top of the pack. But Pete touches on an important point, and it's one that the Obama people have begun talking about, which is that being 46 years old, dealing with threats to the United States that are radically different than what they ever were before is a positive asset. Senator McCain has tremendous experience, firsthand experience, in dealing with many threats to national security, but they were shaped by the architecture of the Cold War. And that experience really is of dubious utility in certain areas of where the United States finds itself today. So Senator Obama can certainly make an argument that his lack of experience leaves him open to new ideas, new approaches, strategies towards foreign policy, which is, I would not be surprised to see the campaign moving in that direction.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the key contours of the campaign on the national security front, is Obama trying to, because it would be difficult, trying to define Senator McCain's experience as of a different era, and that it's 2008. It would have been great in 88 or 78, sort of the Cold War mindset, but not so much now. And McCain trying to say, you don't have any experience in this. I have this unassailable war record. I've been involved in national security issues for quite some time. And the contours of politics still are about power and threats, and there is some danger. There are dangerous people out there, and I'm much more capable of dealing with this. So those two worldviews, again, I think part of it's generational, et cetera, is going to make this fascinating as they try to define each other.
All right, Pete Ronayne, Jim Sofka in the studio today as we talk national and state politics. 979-0919-1877-WNRN Rocks, 1142 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, before the Title IX law enacted in 1972, most high schools and colleges had no varsity sports for women and didn't care. Things are obviously different now. The Hook looks from past to present. Will you be one of those folks complaining when FCC laws require all stations to begin sending out digital TV signals rather than analog? And how to tell if you being late actually helps or hurts you, along with tips to getting back on track. The Hook, suggesting at least an SPF 15 when reading outdoors. Let's also thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. You can get the outdoor sandals as well as gear for travel, including shorts, duffel bags, and cool sun hats. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at brms.com. And I know you won't be going anywhere at noon, because Les Temps Perdue will be here, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Michael Jackson or Britney Spears, no Chicago, but you will hear Silverchair, Tears for Fears, Susie and the Banshees, and requests always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music here on WNRN. All right, back with Pete and Jim. You know, let's talk briefly, because it's only an hour, about what each candidate wants to focus on. We touched on that in the last little bit of the conversation about change. Iraq, the economy. I was hearing a conversation the other day about the offshore drilling that has been proposed, and whether McCain will vote for it, whether Barack will even be there, because it's sort of split even amongst his own party race as to whether we should do that or not, because the general population has this vision of it lowering gas prices almost immediately if we start doing this. So where is what is each candidate going to vote on? I mean, what are the important pieces?
Well, obviously, gas prices are number one issue that the American electorate is talking about today. Now, the Saudis have increased 2 days ago to increase production somewhat. That will certainly have an effect on the oil market. Oil prices went down on Friday's trading a little bit, not an appreciable amount. And what this means is that gas prices are not going to radically drop anytime soon, but they're probably not going to go up at the dramatic rate that was predicted a few weeks ago. But certainly the fact that there's pain at the pump is going to play into both sides. I think McCain actually has the tougher road to hoe here. He has actually talked more than many Republicans about the dangers of climate change, global warming. He's been back and forth over the years on offshore drilling. And Vice President Cheney made a speech last week, it wasn't widely reported, in which he sort of called for full bore drilling and exploration in the United States, opening up ANWR. I mean, it was sort of the Republican maximalist position on drill anywhere you can possibly find two drops of oil. And McCain sort of, because he's been back and forth on this, I think is going to have a tougher time on what to vote on that issue. I think at the end of the day, he will move a little bit closer to the more mainstream Republican position, which is for greater cultivation of potential American oil resources. Obama's talked much more about the global environmental movement. He's talked about diplomatic engagement with oil-producing countries. And there's an argument there, too, because the Iran issue, which is not one of the ones, Rick, that you brought up, but I think is going to become one of the most crucial foreign policy decisions by November, plays into all of these. Because if there is going to be a conflict with Iran over its nuclear program, all indications are that this is going to lead to an increased uptick in oil prices and gas prices, regardless of whether or not ANWR is open, regardless of increased drilling, at least in the short term. So Obama is focused a little bit more on that issue right now, I think, on the totality of American Middle East policy. How do we pull our troops out of Iraq and work out a strategy for that while simultaneously engaging Iran in a way that limits the nuclear program that we don't want, but also doesn't cause oil prices to spike even further?
Pete, hold on a sec. I see that you want to say something. I want to go back to something Jim said. What I call first paragraph politics, which is people who read the headline, they read the first paragraph, and that's it. They don't read the rest of the story. And you mentioned McCain having a tougher road to hoe in terms of the gas price issue.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people, what they remember, and certainly what the Republicans are going to put out there, is that Barack Obama voted against the, what I call the summer tax holiday.
Yes.
And isn't that the vision that so many people have, those who are paying slight attention, have in their head that the Republicans will remind them of, hey, tax prices are high. Look what this guy didn't do to help you. Even though those who pay more attention and read further into the articles understand that that really wasn't going to have any effect, and certainly not after November or after September. I mean, how does that, doesn't that help McCain and hurt Barack Obama?
It could, but the problem is that issue has faded. Again, this being one of those, you know, Pete was talking about before, shelf life of 3 days. What really drove that story was the dispute between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Because Hillary Clinton and McCain both favored that holiday. Barack Obama did not. He felt it really wasn't going to do anything. It was a short-term Band-Aid, and it would disappear very quickly. Once the Democratic primary race was over, I found it interesting that that issue went away. The head-to-head between Obama and McCain on that issue was nowhere near as much of a news story as the dispute between Hillary Clinton and Obama over that story.
And the conversation you guys are having points to, I think, I mean, doesn't take a political genius to see this at all. The real contour of this election is going to be around the economy. I mean, it goes right back to the 1992 James Carville formulation that it's the economy stupid. I mean, it really is. And it's, I find it interesting that we haven't spent a lot of time on it, the whole who's going to be the VP thing. But one of the issues that consistently comes up is choosing a VP who will, particularly on the Obama side, bolster his national security credentials, et cetera. But in every survey that's done, the clear winner in terms of the top issues for Americans, it's the economy, with gas prices and lending crisis, et cetera, being subsets of that. It's the economy far and away, then Iraq, and then honestly everything else is a distant third. I mean, so distant as to barely even register on the poll. So what these candidates need to do in this sort of it's the economy stupid formulation is, I mean, they have two things sort of broadly defined. They have to come across as optimistic, because the national mood right now is very pessimistic. It's very down. I mean, you have a president with a 30% rating, and people have a very poor sense of where the country is going. So they have to be optimistic, and they have to provide some sort of solutions, whether that's offshore drilling, whether that's a tax holiday, whatever their solutions are. But that combination is the mix that both candidates need to provide, and it's going to be really about the economy. So we can talk about all these VP candidates, and they're going to bring this national security credential and everything. In the end, that's not going to be, I think, the defining issue. They're going to have to show that they care, show that they have pragmatic, positive solutions to make people feel better about the economy and where the country's going.
I agree with Pete on that right now. I think the economy is the driving factor. I have a sense, though, that as we get closer to the fall, it's going to go back towards foreign policy, because it links to Iran. There's been a lot of developments that are going to be pending this summer with discussions with Iran over the nuclear program that I think are going to make foreign policy a more crucial point at the later stages of the campaign. But I agree, right now, the focus is almost exclusively on the economy.
But part of that pessimism comes from the global issues. There's just a new report from the Pew Center for the People in the Press. There's just some wonderful polling, if we dare talk about polls. But in terms of respect for the U.S. on the world stage, and their most recent numbers, 60% of Republicans even say now that the nation is less respected. And that's from 2 years ago, it was just 43%. And so this idea of, now, if you're a Republican, do you think McCain will better restore respect on the world stage or Obama? That's a different question, but it does build into the optimism-pessimism issue.
Well, I will say that you guys are too caught up in your own interests. You're not reading some of the articles or watching some of the television that you should, because you mentioned the economy and Iraq and nothing else even registering. If you watch ETV, if you read Entertainment Magazine, the first ladies are a big part of what's going on.
Yes, yes. We hope that goes away.
Absolutely.
And I'm curious as to, does it matter? Does who is the first lady, how much of an effect can they have on a campaign? Because obviously, Michelle Obama has been getting a lot of press, the majority of it negative. Is she perceived as being too strong? I mean, Cindy McCain has had, is it Cindy McCain?
It is.
Yes.
I mean, that's how little she's gotten, is that I didn't even write that down, and because I didn't think I'd have to remember it. But is Michelle Obama getting enough negative press to have an effect on the national numbers?
I would sort of go back to Jim's answer from before, Rick, where I think it's still so early. There's so much time now with the remainder of the summer and into early fall for them to kind of redefine and recharacterize each other. I think it's also one of the perils that Michelle Obama has, but Barack Obama as well. They still are relatively new, and so a relatively new commodity for Americans to get to know. McCain's been around a lot longer, maybe a bit more vetted, et cetera. Cindy McCain has had a bit more practice of being in the big time spotlight. Now, that being said, I mean, Michelle Obama, what is she, a communications person or something like that? That's her background.
Hospital administration, yeah.
Yeah, so she should know how to present. But I think it's part of the speed bumps along the way of becoming known and becoming acquainted with the American people. But in the end, it's going to have even less effect than the vice president is going to have. I mean,
I had somebody tell me that the problem with Michelle Obama, and that was their word choice, was that she was perceived as strong as Hillary Clinton, and look where that got them.
Well, it got Hillary Clinton to within a hair's breadth of being the Democratic nominee. She had a Senate seat in New York and was first lady for 8 years, so she did pretty well out of it.
Not so bad so far.
This was an issue in 90. You know, the issue that you're raising, Rick, was an issue in 92.
It was like get both for one vote.
Yeah,
or
two for one, and then there was that famous discussion where Hillary Clinton said, "I'm not going to be the kind of woman who's going to stay at home and bake cookies," and people went over that. And this is going to have absolutely no impact whatsoever, unless there is, again, some colossal blunder.
It gives MSNBC and Fox and all these guys that are on 24/7 something to whip themselves into a frenzy about and play clips over and over again.
In June.
But I think both of the candidates, John McCain and Barack Obama, are behind the scenes and say, let's dial this down. We do not want this to define or distract at all. It's about us as candidates, and it's a sideshow that's going to go away.
That both of them would choose that their wives not be the defining moment, and not just because they want to win their piece, but because it's unfair to their partners.
Exactly right.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, let's jump back to the vice presidential aspect of the campaign, because one of the things that I found interesting was the possibility that's been put out there of a Republican representative, Chuck Hagel, from Nebraska?
Yes, former senator from Nebraska, yeah.
Being put on the Democratic ticket with Barack Obama. Is that a real possibility?
It's sort of
just
a very
interesting. Oh, yeah, you have a Democrat and a Republican together.
I think it speaks volumes to again the nature of this election that it's even talked about in a way that it never would have been in the past, even remotely. So there's something going on that allows people to even flirt with this idea if you find it appealing or not. Hagel's a possibility. He said he would consider it. He's got the Vietnam veteran status. He is a Republican who clearly is against the war now and has been very outspoken about that, both on the Senate floor and in his book. But he's a Republican. I mean, if you're like a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat and you get kind of all excited about this sort of unity type ticket, he is a bedrock conservative on most domestic issues, and that would make him very unpalatable to a lot of hardcore Democrats.
But his Planned Parenthood rating is
no, but still, in terms of sort of signaling.
I mean,
and,
does this go back to the nasty thought about, if he has to take over?
Yes, actually, okay. What I think is, and I wanted to make this point, I was thinking about it driving in, it's so fun to talk about the vice presidents, because this, Webb would maybe help bring Virginia into the fold, and if you choose one of the female governors from the nation, Napolitano or Sebelius, they help bring gender balance, et cetera. Actually, what is most important, number one, is this person could be the president. And not just through some horrible scenario, but this could be your standard holder for the party for the next go-round, whether Obama wins or not. So is this the person you want to be, your standard bearer?
So you're talking about a 2012 or 16 election.
Or even before that, but absolutely. Yeah. So thinking in terms of party succession, you are lining this person up. What does a Hagel do for you in that regard? Not much. He's not going to become a full-fledged Democrat.
No, it's a tactical choice entirely to get through the election. And again, could you imagine what MoveOn.org would do if you put someone as the vice president of the Democratic Party up for election who's not fully pro-choice? I mean, the arguments over this is where someone like Hagel, and it's true also on the other side. There's been some speculation about McCain selecting Joe Lieberman. They're very close friends. Lieberman, of course, historically a Democrat, now an independent, but caucuses with the Democrats, same problem for him. It's great to talk about this sort of grand bargain, a grand alliance across parties, but in today's hyper-partisan, polarized atmosphere, you don't want somebody on there. Pete's right. Number one, you don't want somebody who isn't that you're not setting up to succeed you fully, but also it's the Hippocratic Oath. You want a vice president who will first do no harm. And the last thing you want is to get involved in extended conversations within your own party about why someone is appropriate for that job. You want someone who immediately rallies people.
Exciting if you really are this agent of change and a post-partisan candidate. It would be extremely surprising if it happened.
I agree.
11:58 in the wake-up call as we finish up our chat with Jim Sofka and Pete Ronayne, talking national and state politics. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. that has Tim's Purdue with Drew Thompson up in just mere moments. Okay, let's finish it up with the VP thoughts on, talk about pulling things together. Is, will Hillary Clinton actually get asked to do so, or will she sort of nudge her way into the role? Are those true possibilities?
No, to both. Hillary Clinton is not going to be vice president. She's not going to be asked to be vice president, and I don't know why she would want to be asked to be vice president, other than the ego boost that it would provide. She has vastly more power in the Senate. There's all kinds of discussions about what to do with her. There's been one argument going around that Barack Obama could give her the first seat in the Supreme Court, which would be a nice reward for her, powerful, and also get her out of elected politics.
I would say that's extremely likely.
I would say, and it would be tactically a good move for him. But no, it Hillary Clinton on the ticket would destroy the change argument. It brings the Clinton baggage without really giving you a lot of extra oomph to your ticket. So I don't think that's going to happen. Whether there might be a dance where it was put out that he talked to her about the job and she politely declined it, which made it look like he bent the knee, I don't think so. I think she knows and he knows that that's done. That's right. It's not going to happen.
Pete, finish up for us.
I would completely agree. There's such a long, Jim and I were talking about this, such a long list of potential Obama VPs that get so much attention. The McCain side is really equally interesting, but you don't hear as much about it. Many more governors being talked about on the McCain side of things. But to finish it up, you know, we've had a lot of surprises more recently, which blows out the whole thing about geography and those sorts of issues. I mean, Cheney's name wasn't out there at all last time out, and then all of a sudden he was on the ticket. And when Clinton picked Gore, for example, no one expected that. Both sort of the same age, both from the South, et cetera. So don't be surprised, just as dark horse, to see Giuliani's name reappear for McCain. I think that's a very strong possibility. On the Obama side of things, I think Webb is still a strong contender, but also the governor of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, brings a lot to the table.
All right, guys, thank you so much. We'll be back. We'll do some more political shows, obviously, especially as we get close and post party conventions. Jim Sofka, Pete Ronayne, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Rick.
Please enjoy this beautiful day.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.